Commandment is the seven deadly sins, and we've looked so far at pride, and we turn today to look at wrath, or if you went to the other kind of university, wrath. I'm not sure. I call it wrath anyway. Anger, I think, is a better word. Anger is a very difficult sin, because it has its good sides and its bad. It's like atomic energy. It's like drugs. Atomic energy and drugs are life savers as well as life destroyers. And anger is the same. But in its bad form, it's obviously a serious sin. I don't know if you know the story of the two men traveling in a train, and they thought the man opposite them was the Archbishop of Canterbury. So behind a newspaper, one man said to the other, "You know, I think that chap over there is the Archbishop of Canterbury. I bet you five bob he's the Archbishop of Canterbury." And the other man said, "Well, your bet's on." And so they went over to him and they said to him, "Excuse me, sir, are you the Archbishop of Canterbury?" And the man exploded. He said, "Get to blazes out of here. Mind your own business." So the chap went behind his newspaper and he says, "The bet's off, we'll never know." I just hope it wasn't the Archbishop of Canterbury. Our reading, if you have a Bible near to you, comes from 1 Samuel 25. And I'm going to read the first 16 verses. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, for they buried him in his house at Ramah. Then David rose and went down to the wilderness of Paran, and there was a man of Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now the name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife was Abigail. She was of good understanding and beautiful. But the man was churlish and ill-behaved. He was a Calebite. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, so David sent 10 young men. And David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, and go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall salute him. Peace be to you, and peace be on your house, and peace be to all that you have. I hear that you have shearers, and now your shepherds have been with us, and we did them no harm, and they missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Pray give whatever you have at hand to your servants, and to your son David." When David's young men came and said all this to Nabal in the name of David, then they waited, and Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse?" There are many servants nowadays who are breaking away from their masters. "Shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men who come from I do not know where?" So David's young men turned away and went back and told him all this. And David said to his men, "Every man gird on his sword." And every man of them girded on his sword. David also girded on his sword. About 400 men went after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm. We did not miss anything when they were in the fields, as long as we went with them. They were a wall to us, both by night and by day, all the while we were with them, keeping the sheep." I think we'll conclude the reading there, and look at other parts of the chapter in a moment. First of all, notice that there are three characters in this chapter: Nabal, Abigail, and David. But the central figure certainly is Nabal, And the Hebrew name Nabal simply means a fool. He was a descendant of Caleb. He had inherited all the lands from Maon to Carmel. Remember that Carmel in Hebrew means the garden land or the fruitful place. Carmel was the Kent of Palestine. And he was obviously very rich so far as land was concerned. And he was obviously very rich in cattle. Yet 1 Samuel 25 and verse 3 says, he was churlish and ill-behaved. The older translations like the Septuagint, puts it like this. He was a dogged man of currish disposition, surly, snappish, and always snarling. Now, anger takes many forms. It can come in the form of cruelty, or quarreling, or murder, or ferocity, or callousness, or peevishness, or sullenness, or severity. And as I tried to think of the causes of anger, I've jotted down three causes of anger in my notes. First of all, I think we get angry when we are unable to accept ourselves, either our physical state, or our mental makeup, or our inherited wealth. Now, one of the reasons why Nabal could have been so snappish was that he couldn't come to accept himself that he had inherited all of these lands. And some people find things like that rather difficult. He had inherited all of the possessions that belonged to Caleb, and he became a ferocious man because he wanted to prove to the people around him that he was a big man in his own right. Not just because I've inherited lands, but can't you understand, he says with a snarl, I'm a big man. I'm a big man in my own right. Sometimes we can't accept ourselves because of our physical stature. You know that quotation that I sometimes use of Dr. Keat, who was the headmaster at Eton when the poet Shelley was there. And he once preached a sermon to the boys at Eton on charity, and he ended the sermon with the words, boys, be charitable, or I'll flog you till you are. Well, we're told that Dr. Keat was a little man, and that could account for him being so ferocious. Lots of little men are ferocious because they can't accept their own height. And so they overcompensate for it, and they smile, and they are currish, to use the word of the Septuagint, and they have this rather dogged disposition. And then some people cannot accept their mental makeup, and that's one reason why they go around making a lot of noise. They feel inferior, or they feel that they've got a chip on their shoulder, or whatever it is. We get angry if we are unable to accept ourselves. And then we get angry when we feel that other people are not accepting us. Now that's clearly what Nabal did. In verse 10 he says, who is, did you say David? Who is this, the son of Jesse? Well, Nabal was Jesse's neighbor. Of course Nabal had heard of Jesse. Everyone had heard of David. But you see, he was rather worried that his own shearers weren't accepting him, that they were beginning to accept David. So he's rather angry about it. He feels that he isn't accepted, so he has to snarl and snap. There's a book on psychology for laymen called Games People Play, and in it is an interesting story about a big businessman in America, where he had a sort of complex that in his firm people weren't accepting him. And this made him rather snappish and gave him an anger and rather peevish. And one day he went home and he saw his own little son tearing up a $1 bill. And he went up to his son and he slapped his son. And his wife said, hey, you can't hit the children like that, you know. I mean, if the children do something wrong, send them up to the room, you know, smack their bottoms. But don't lose your temper like that. You ought to see a psychiatrist. And being an American, of course, he trotted straight off to the psychiatrist and explained what had happened. And the psychiatrist put it in these terms, terms like this. What happened to you was that you saw your son tearing up a $1 bill and you gave him a $10 slap. Now, it all went back to the things that were happening in that man's firm. He felt he wasn't accepted by the people around him, so in the end he took it out on his son. And how often we do that, how often business people go home and take it all out on their wives, all the things that they feel during the day, taking it out on other people. Well, there are three general causes for anger. Inability to accept ourselves, the feeling that we're not accepted by other people, and of course the feeling that we are not at the center of things. And Nabal could have felt like that, and that could have made him sullen. People were talking about David. Now, I've got two headings in my notes. First of all, I want you to notice the fool who lost his temper. I suppose I began that the name Nabal means fool. So let's look at some of the things that anger does. First of all, anger causes us to do things that we regret. I think you see that in verse 36 of 1 Samuel 25, where we have these words, Abigail came to Nabal, and lo, he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king, and Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. I think that he was drunk. Of course, that's purely conjecture. I think that he was drunk because he was ashamed that he had lost his temper. And he went home and he had a good drink. And I think that when we lose our temper, in the end, we always regret it. There's a marvelous story told about Alexander the Great after a famous battle. And the flatterers were very busy likening Alexander to Castor and Pollux, and even saying that he was equal to Hercules. And Alexander accepted the flattery, but a friend called Cleitus was brave enough or reckless enough to tell Alexander the truth. And he said, look, you mustn't listen to these men. You are a great soldier, but you cannot be compared with Hercules. And Alexander had been drinking, and he picked up a spear, and he hurled it at Cleitus, and he killed Cleitus outright. And the action of killing Cleitus sobered him, and his friends had to restrain him from taking his own life. A fool who lost his temper. In the first place, it causes us to do things which afterwards we regret. And then secondly, losing our temper blinds our judgment, verses 14 and 16. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute our master, and he railed at them. Yet the men were very good to us, and we suffered no harm, and we did not miss anything when they were in the field, as long when we were in the fields, as long as we went with them, and they were a wall to us both by night and by day. Now this private army of David had been preserving the flock of sheep belonging to Nabal. And Nabal's anger blinded his judgment. Anger has been described as momentary madness. And that's what it is. It blinds our judgment. Nabal could not see that he was benefiting from David's protection. And you see, the very polite way that David came to Nabal to ask for things, he said, if there's anything that you could give us, please do. And he even calls himself your son. You know, he makes Nabal his father. He puts himself in the place of sonship and puts Nabal in the place of honor to him. And yet Nabal's anger blinded his judgment. And then, of course, anger makes rational conversation impossible. Again, verse 10. Who is David? Who is this son of Jesse? You can't have a rational conversation with an angry man, because he's going to talk like that. He's not going to talk rationally. Of course he knew who David was, as I said before. Well, thank goodness that David's young men didn't stop, and we're told in verse 12, so David's young men turned away. They didn't bother to have a conversation with him. And then anger kills relationships. Obviously, the marriage between Nabal and Abigail had grown cold. Perhaps it went back further than that. Perhaps Nabal was a tiny man, or he couldn't accept the wealth that he had inherited. He couldn't accept himself. So he took it out on his wife. And so he took it out on his shearers. So he took it out on David's young men. So he took it out on David. Anger kills relationships. Anger causes strife. You know the story about the colonel that was inspecting the parade ground, and he said to the major, "Major, come over here. Can you see that these men haven't blankoed the parade ground over in this little corner?" And the major said, "Sergeant Major, will you come here? See that your men haven't kind of blankoed this corner over here." And the sergeant major said, "Sergeant, will you come over here? Will you see that the corporal hasn't blankoed the bit of this parade ground over here?" And the corporal said, "Hey, private, will you come over here? And see that you haven't blankoed this bit of parade ground over here?" And the private walked away and he kicked the cat. There's nothing else for him to do, poor chap. But anger destroys relationships all the way down the line. It makes every relationship impossible. It doesn't matter where it starts. It starts in our office. We get angry, or the person above us gets angry, and we get angry, and we go home, and we sit down, and there's that marvelous meal of chicken curry, and we're sullen, we're peevish and churlish, and we say, "Chicken curry again." And the wife says, switches on the TV program and says, "I want to watch Panorama." And you say, "Well, I can't bear another week of Panorama," or whatever it is. Anger destroys relationships. Anger, says Proverbs, causes strife. Then in the end, anger is suicidal. It always is. Verse 37 of 1 Samuel 25, what has happened is that Abigail has gone out and placated David. How often wives have to go out and make up for the ill temper of their husbands. And in the end, in the morning, when the wine had gone out of Nabal, his wife told him these things, and his heart died within him, and he became as a stone. Now, I cannot find a better medical statement than that of a heart attack and the paralysis that follows a heart attack. There it is. Nabal's filled with anger, and bang, goes the blood vessel straight away, and paralysis sets in. As I said at the beginning, I'm in the Middlesex, and in the Middlesex Hospital, there's an oil painting at this very moment in the committee room where we hold our prayer meetings, an oil painting of John Hunter, a famous physiologist, and he said once, "The first scoundrel that gets me angry will kill me." And sometime later at a medical meeting he was giving a lecture, and a very bright young man got up and said that the things that he was saying were wrong, and John Hunter got up and bitterly attacked the young man, and he caused a blood vessel in his heart to contract, and on the spot he fell dead. Anger itself is suicidal. That great Japanese Christian, Kagawa, says the poison generated by anger is literally fatal. The fool who loses his temper. Now, my second heading is the man of God who found his temper. Verse 13. And David said to his men, "Every man gird on his sword," and every man of them girded on his sword. David also girded on his sword, and about 400 men went up after David, while 200 remained with the baggage. Now here is, if you like, some form of righteous anger. It's the fool who loses his temper. But I believe that the man of God in our own time has got to discover his temper about the right sort of things. When Abraham Lincoln saw an old slave woman sold in a marketplace like an animal, he said, "I'm going to hit that thing, slavery. I'm going to hit that thing, and I'm going to hit it hard." Jowett, the great Congregationalist preacher, writes that if a person's gentleness never becomes anger, his character is incomplete. Such gentleness soon ceases to be a virtue and becomes a contemptible vice. Robert Louis Stevenson summarizes, quote, "The truth of Christ's teaching seems to be this. In our own person and fortune, we should be ready to accept and to pardon all. It is our cheek we are to turn. It is our coat we are to give away to the man who has taken our cloak. But when another's face is buffeted, perhaps a little of the lion will become us best. That we are to suffer others to be injured and to stand by is not conceivable and surely is not desirable." Bishop Thurn of Chester, one of the friends of Charles I, it was said that his only fault is that he could not be angry. Thomas Fuller, one of the great Christian fathers, says that anger is a sinew of the mind. He who lacks anger has a maimed mind. F.W. Boreham, writing about that great preacher, F.W. Robinson of Brighton, said that that great preacher and saint writes in one of his letters about the fact that he used to bite his lip until it bled when he had to walk about by a man in the high street whom he knew was seducing young girls. He bit his lip till it bled because his heart was filled with white, hot anger. I found a very good piece in the Sunday Times for the 25th of April of this year, when Wilson went to Rhodesia to meet with Smith, and Wilson was having a meeting. It was on the 27th of October, 1965, and the two great African politicians were called to the meeting. Nkomo, and I can't quite see the name of the other man, but you'll remember there were two of them. And at lunchtime, Smith said to Wilson, "Well, let's go out to lunch." And Smith discovered that these two great African politicians had been brought so early from the prison camp in the morning that they had missed their breakfast. And then he discovered that he and Smith, Wilson and Smith, were going out to a three-course lunch. And these two leading African politicians were not going to be given any lunch. And so Wilson exploded, and he writes in his book, he says he literally saw red. He said that red flashes passed before his eyes. And he said he took out his wallet, and he held it in the face of Smith. And he said, "If you don't guarantee straight away that these two men have a three-course lunch, I am going out personally into the streets of Rhodesia, and I am going to buy them each a three-course meal, and I am going to be followed by the world's press, and I am going to tell them what I am doing." Thank goodness Smith saw red that day. He's rather fortunate that he didn't see blue. I think that would have been rather confusing. But he saw red. Thank goodness he lost his temper with Smith. Thank goodness he did. For the sake of those African politicians. The man of God is the fool who loses his temper, but I think perhaps the man of God in our generation has to find his temper. We look in the Gospels and we see on many occasions that Jesus was angry. He was angry with the orthodoxy of the Jews in Mark 3, when they wouldn't heal on the Sabbath day. He was angry against his disciples in Mark 10:14 when they refused to bring children to him. He was angry with the people that desecrated the place of worship in Mark 11. He was angry against the self-righteousness of the Pharisees. One of the things that has been happening through this week and always happens in a mission, you always get some of the bright young medics coming up and they're saying, well, of course we can accept Jesus. They say, well, you preached the wrong sort of sermon to us tonight. We accept him as an historical character. We realize that he lived, there was no doubt about that, and we realize that he died. But he was just a man. You can't pretend that he was more than a man. He was a very good man. And of course the answer that we always give is that he was either completely mad, and that crucifixion, given to him 1,000 times, would not have been a just punishment for the deception, for his deception of the human race. And one of the places that I always turn to is John 11, where Lazarus is being buried. Do you remember what happens at the funeral of Lazarus? There are those two women weeping by the grave as the body of Lazarus is lowered into the grave. And Jesus doesn't take out a handkerchief and say, there, dry your eyes. I'm awfully sorry this thing's got to happen, you know, people die. Don't worry, I mean, let's pick up the threads of life for the family's sake. Let's have a stiff upper lip, etc. Jesus doesn't say that at all. Jesus says, as he sees those women weeping at the grave, he says, don't worry. The pronoun comes twice, I am the resurrection and the life. You don't need to worry about Lazarus going into the grave, because I am the resurrection. Now, it seems to me that no good man could say that at a funeral. Are you good people? I think you are. Is that the sort of thing a good man could say at a funeral? Don't worry. I am the resurrection. You don't need to cry. I'm the resurrection. Those are the words of a man that was completely mad, completely bad, or he was the person who he claimed to be. Now the other interesting thing about John 11 is that we're told that Jesus was furious. Now I find that intriguing. The Greek word literally says that he was furious. He was furious at the illness that had killed Lazarus. He was furious at it. And let me show you what that means. I don't think that means that he didn't accept it. But I think that it means that he was furious about the worldly ills. Of course he realized that it was in God's plan that Lazarus died at that moment. And of course he realized that may it be that it was part of God's plan that he should demonstrate his divinity by bringing Lazarus back to life. But he was furious. He was furious at the ills of the world. And I think that this is the sort of temper that we're not to lose, but we're to find. We're to be furious about the ills of the world. We're to be furious when Arabs cannot live with Jews. We're to be furious about the suffering in East Pakistan or Bangladesh or whatever it's called. And we're to be even more furious when the aid sent to that country is not used properly. We're to be furious about the hard pornography in our country at the moment. We're to be furious about the state of our country. And that is right, because of the way that our country is going. It is the fool that loses his temper, and that sort of temper causes regret afterwards, is blind in its judgment, makes rational conversation impossible, kills any kind of relationship, in the end is suicidal. If you have that kind of momentary madness, then you have a heart attack, just like Nabal did. But the man of God in our generation, I believe, has got to find his temper. And we are to be furious. There's got to be real righteous indignation there about some of the social ills that we see around us. Let us pray. Father, we see in our own soul some of the causes of anger. We find it very difficult to accept ourselves for what we are. Sometimes we find ourselves getting angry because we feel that other people don't accept us. And we know that we get peevish and sullish when we feel that we're not at the center of the stage. Keep us from that sort of anger, the sort of anger that is suicidal. But Lord, in our own time, give us righteous indignation. Make us furious about some of the world's ills in the right way. Help us to be the men and women of God that in the right things find our temper. We ask it for Jesus' sake. Amen.